This show is not a financial advice. Bitcoin and shitcoins involve risk. Consult with a professional before investing. Now it's time for our sponsors. HealthyBookCrate.com. HealthyBookCrate.com is a bi-monthly book subscription box that guides subscribers to better understanding the importance of wellness and nourishment for the mind and body. You will get to read, you will get to sip and support. Every month we create a box around women's fiction book and our selected theme. Each feature title is a prominent, recently released first edition women's fiction novel, usually signed by the author. Each box includes loose leaf tea or coffee that ties into the feature story as well as our chosen theme. We work with small artisans to inspire you to experience new brands and different types of tea and coffee. Every box includes self-care products, bookish goods made by small artisans. We work with brands that are prominently women-owned, promote wholesome ingredients, and send positive messages to our subscribers. The September subscription started at $58, while a six-month subscription started at $170, while a yearly subscription started at $332. The whole website is absolutely fabulous. I recommend you guys to check it out, check out the products. The site is healthybookcrate.com. Healthybookcrate.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out bitpiggies.com also. Are you looking for podcast music? Or just music in general? Or whatever music? Maybe you want to jazz onto something. Look no further. Go on Twitter at Holovirus. Holovirus and his friend create really epic music. Really, really epic music, not just for podcasts. If you're looking for something to jazz out onto, or something new to commission, you should show him a DM or an ad at him. For more information about his rates and the commission prices, DM him for more information. Okay, now we're recording. So, welcome to my show. Welcome to the Bitcoin Rehab Show. My guest today is BTC Viking, one of my good friends here, who I met in Germany last year. He's really into the topic of high time preference and other all kinds of social degenerational topics related to socialism, if we can say that. So, welcome to my show. So, tell the listeners a bit about yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Hi, I'm Eric. You may know me from Twitter as Hodling Eric or as BTC Viking. I'm basically right now trying to understand Bitcoin in every way I can. You know, it never stops. Like every day there's a new rabbit hole. Every day something new to learn.
A new rabbit hole, huh? How deep is it? How deep did you manage to get?
If you ever know like how deep it goes, I will tell you.
Because I've been digging for a year, for like 2 years now, and I can't really find the bottom of it.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you see how much it's increasing or like growing every day. What's happening right now? And no matter if it's like the Dave Portnoy thing with the Winklevii right now, or one after the other shitcoiner like being converted into a sat stacker. You know? Yeah. I mean, we just talked about it. When Chainlink crashes, it will all go into Bitcoin, and a lot of people will have learned the lesson. A lot of people will gamble again, but you know.
Let's hope that's true. So what do you do for a living?
Well, right now I'm honestly trying to get my own business started, and it's also been what I have been doing before. To be very honest right now, I have been a part and member of a business that was selling vegan supplements. So. I know my part around that. That company has been sold. I'm out of that. That was what I have been doing before. What I studied for is brand management and international marketing. international marketing was my master's degree. And yeah, I think that's also like how I'm very sensitive to this scam.
The marketing like, scams, basically, like with all the shit coins.
I would say the whole education system scam, you know?
Oh, I see,
but,
I see.
But all of it, definitely. It's like a big, big shit coin thing going on, you know? People are like just not honest anymore. They're scamming each other everywhere they can. And that's also why, like, as you mentioned, right, like I'm into low time preference, high time preference things, trying to understand, you know, how it, for example, enables greed and how people like navigate and make decisions throughout their lives, being good people that are bad for them and others, you know?
Yeah. So when did you start Bitcoining?
I have heard of it the first time in 2014. Actually, while I have been at post-grad school in San Francisco, I was researching a little bit about it, connected to some, you know, there's some hackathons going on, and I was able to go there. I've been like, I had to like Google entrepreneurship programs and stuff, and you meet just other people, you have ideas, and you basically find your team and you pitch your idea, you know, like, you go up there, you say, hi, I'm Cairo. I really want to make this app work. And then like designers and coders may come to you, introduce themselves. You can say, yeah, let's form this team and over the weekend, make something great. And there was someone presenting something about Bitcoin.
Oh,
and
What was that? Totally tell me about it.
I don't really remember anymore.
Oh, shit.
It was Android related, and it was... I think it was about like just a wallet app, but at this time, you know, it didn't make sense to me. It was the first time for me hearing about it at all. And it was already about an application of it. You know, I may have heard about it as magic money, or internet money, but I didn't have an opinion. And I also was on a total different trip. I was pre-Bitcoin, you know, mm-hmm. I always say pre-Bitcoin doesn't count. So it's like... It's like your greed-enabled side, maybe. I mean, I feel I'm a better person with Bitcoin. So who doesn't feel so, please get in the comments. But I think everything gets better through the teachings of like Bitcoin and what happened in 2008 and before that, of course, you know, Creature of Jekyll Island. Like it goes back time and time, like 200 years, fiat experiment. It's just... exposing everything as a scam.
So how do you view Bitcoin? What is it to you?
Bitcoin is life. I would say it's really everything. Like by now, I think through the Bitcoin lens, you can see everything in a different kind of light, you know? And I'm really trying to go with that, you know, to like to read everything I can about libertarians and libertarianism, and to understand what Bitcoin stands for, what it enables, what it ends, how it will disrupt this whole thing, you know? Like, I don't know if you have seen... No, I asked you haven't seen Jeff Booth on Max Kaiser, right?
Nope.
He's having the perfect face when he explains how disruptive this is probably going to be. How people will not be able to buy sats anymore when we are at this point where inflation goes into deflation. You know, we have never been in this position right now. Like maybe before La Belle Epoque, you know, the gold epoch. Maybe before that, because we got into, I mean, it was a stable environment, at least less inflationary, and before the Industrial Revolution. So you could say it was pretty deflationary. And well, we have seen the switch from this system into what we have today. And well, we see what happens. And I can't imagine how this all will end when hyper-Bitcoinization comes, probably hyperinflation comes too.
Highly likely, if you think about it, like how value is able to transform over time. So with the stock to flow, basically, I have a couple issues with the stock to flow model. First of all, is that the stock-to-flow model is actually just a present prediction for the future. So everything is relative to the value that we currently see. That is not within any consideration to inflation of the given other monetary unit that it's being counted in. So it's this. So in this example, for example, U.S. dollar.
So did you read Jeff Booth's book?
No, but okay. I want to buy it, but I didn't manage to get around it. But the whole point is that I think what is actually needed right now is an inflation-adjusted stock-to-flow model, because this is actually impossible to do, because you can never know that when we're going to have a higher percentage sudden inflation hitting the U.S. dollar, and when that might, you know, dislocate the stock-to-flow model and increase prices. Because then what is logical is that you need to adjust every number on the stock-to-flow model, because then if inflation happens, that means that you need to adjust every number in accordance with the inflationary adjustment.
I understand what you mean. It's only a picture of the moment of time.
Yes, like, basically. So like in the given value time, what is today, it is completely irrelevant in the future, because we do not know how much is the inflationary amount. So if the US dollar goes through hyperinflation, that stock-to-flow model is going to be totally irrelevant. It just the amount of what one Bitcoin could cost is going to be like way out of the chart. It's not going to be possible to view it that way. So it has to somehow account for this inflationary value that is not on the stock-to-flow, for example. So it's like it's missing. It should be doing something like it's maybe like have a bar there that allows you to like set like maybe next year it's 30% inflation, and according to that should set the stock-to-flow model from the beginning when the 10,000 Bitcoin was spent for the pizza. Yeah. So then it's not the actual price that it's within the price, but the stock-to-flow price with the inflationary adjustment.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it makes sense for, at least for Plan B. Maybe he would call me a retard or something.
I think he does great work, you know, and he's within like the possibilities we have right now.
Yeah, he does. He does a really amazing job, yeah.
And I got to say, you know, I like the underlying math, if I can say that, to my understanding of the whole model, and the cross integration, like, really made sense to me. And I really believe, like you also just said, that we cannot take the price of Bitcoin to like each given time off of that model, you know?
Yeah.
It's just interpolating what data we have right now and how we can judge it right now. But I think you're very right. And I think that a little bit further into the future, we won't just like technology-wise double in speed or cut the cost in half over 2 years. You know, I think artificial intelligence, machine learning, and all these things will contribute to an explosion in price. And that will happen not like to the next halving or to the next epoch. You know, it's just going to happen at one point. I think at one point, the adoption or hyper-Bitcoinization just happens. It won't be according to the halving, like how the model shows right now, in my opinion. You know, it will just, like, MicroStrategies invests 250 mil. You just get to know this short letter about it, and it's overwhelming, you know, and it just is gradually, then suddenly, truth.
Pretty much. And, like, the other problem is that, you know, what I've been thinking about is how long does stacking sats actually works? What is the point when you are not stacking sats, but you're just using Bitcoin from that point on? Because, you know, if a hyper-Bitcoinization happens, that's supposed to mean that as long as you get into Bitcoin before the hyper-Bitcoinization event, then what is going to be the relative value increase to your investment?
Do you think of yourself, like, because you know about Bitcoin and because you own it, and I mean, like, we're such a small percentage, do you think, like, you're going to be a first-class member of whatever is going to be in that new world because you are in Bitcoin right now and you understood it earlier?
Probably not.
But how do you think so when you at the same time think maybe the demand will explode and probably we are all going to have, like, a different point where it becomes impossible for us to stack anymore because it just becomes too expensive.
It's not the point, but that, you know, when hyperinflation happens, the money doesn't have any value anymore. It gets replaced by Bitcoin. So that's the hyperinflationary demonetization crisis that would have been called.
Okay.
So when fiat currency exits service as a means of transaction, because, you know, if I buy, for example, now right now one Bitcoin, but in 10 years it might go up to $100 million. But what if it's $100 million? If you buy for $10,000 of value at that time in the future, how much will it be even in the future if there is a hyper Bitcoinization going to happen?
You mean the purchasing power?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Have? So like how the purchasing power might actually change if you just get in before, you know, the big pump happens in the end.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that for some time, and like I think nobody knows, because like you said, we haven't been in this situation before.
It's impossible to tell, but it's probably, it's theoretical. It can be probably like at least discussed. It exists in theory, but there is no correct answer to it. But if somebody could answer it, it's probably going to be plan B.
I think at this time, you know, when this happens, and only the companies are able, or the whales are able to buy Bitcoin anymore because of the price, they are also going to start to pay people with it.
Well, obviously, you're going to get wages in Bitcoin, and it's not going to be stacking sats anymore.
I mean, it is stacking sats, but it is not for fiat. It is for labor,
I guess. Yeah. Just saving Bitcoin, saving sats.
And you terminate. What do you think? Are we still in the 6.15 epoch, or after the halving now? How much is it? Is it
I
3
don't know.
Point? You know, like
did it get halved also for Bitcoin bitches?
I mean, did we? It's a good question, because I feel everything can happen, and we just been to this 5K dip just a few months ago.
Are you only getting now half titty bitch? God, you know, we went through the hallway. You know, you said that it's like what is with a big titty bitch mount. But then you said it got halved.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, we just now, you know, did the titties get halved also?
I totally didn't make this connection right now.
Okay. You know, you got amputated or something.
Now it's like, no, it's half the amount of Bitcoin and double the amount of titties, right?
I don't know. We have to ask American Hodl about that.
I think he would approve. Double the titties, half the Bitcoin.
Maybe.
I mean, like you say, it will all rise like inflationary. I think the 288K that he predicts in a cross-integration model.
It's probably going to be a lot more higher than that.
I think it's going to be a lot higher. And look what is happening right now. I mean, Russia and China dialed back cross-border payments, utilizing the dollar by 50%. They're getting out. They're getting out of it. So I think right now America has been still printing, assuming they print for the whole world and they can do what they always did. But Russia and China already started to back their own currencies by much more hard money and abolished the dollar. I don't know. I don't know the number anymore. It was in the article on Zero Hedge where it says like how much they increased their holdings in gold and decreased the amount of dollar they hold in the treasury. So
very interesting things they're doing there also.
It's for the sovereignty.
So what do you think? Where does Bitcoin overall headed?
To the moon.
To the moon.
To the moon.
To the moon.
Yeah, I don't say it's limitless. It's limitless. Like the opportunities Bitcoin will be giving and is giving today already, like to the moon.
And what do you think? What will Bitcoin actually do?
What will Bitcoin do? In regards of what?
Society, whatever.
What time frame are we talking about? Like the next 5 years?
20 years.
20 years. Yeah. It's not much time, but if I can hope, then you can only wish for people appreciating time more.
Well, if you think about it, for example, ever since the agricultural revolution, as it is mentioned, even in the sovereign individual revolution, these cultural and technological revolutions speeded up human transition. And so it's like, it's possible that also how social media started changing society, Bitcoin might be able to change society in just a couple 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully people stop sharing so much, you know? hopefully people will appreciate like being away. I don't know if you do that sometimes. Sometimes I forget my phone by now because of being home through the lockdown and all that. I just forget it. You know, I go out in the garden, like whatever. Then I just forget it laying around, and that feels actually really good. And then you get like a shock, you know, gotta check Twitter or some shit, but it's always...
gotta get on Twitter and tweet something funny.
Yeah, sometimes I just, like, I'm happy about it. I wouldn't have it the other way, that you know, I can forget about Twitter and better find me, oh, like, what's happening? Did somebody, like, respond or some whatever? Something new? Because usually, I have to say, I check for, like, Bitcoin updates on Twitter, right? Like, no matter if it's like Blue Wallet, Stacking BTC, shout out. No matter what. I think, you know what I mean, when recent updates or issues. I know you have been tweeting recently about the cold card chip, right?
That's also interesting. Like, it now it's actually totally open source. As much as available code actually makes the cold card open source.
I think Rodolfo has been tweeting about the cold card chip now being open source.
Yeah. Just, I'm not sure if the firmware for the secure element is actually open source right now.
I don't know how that works. Have you been looking into the build your own cold card? Because he has been publishing that before. But no, is it only about the Mark II?
No, not with the Mark II.
No, I mean, like, is it source the to build your own
well
cold
I think
card.
I think maybe I think, but I'm not entirely sure about that. Might have to ask him. But yeah, I think he's been pushing towards I think making the MK4 completely independent of GPL3 licenses, because he had some run-ins with the Trezor guys, or maybe not run-in, but more like how would I say, he's regretting using him.
I think they just have different approaches. He's a lone wolf, no? Like, I mean, he for sure has a team in CoinKite and stuff, but he's kind of himself on Twitter, and he's not a Trezor, a company, or has like
Peter Gray also with him on the team.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's great. It's the only Bitcoin wallet you have to own to really benefit of all the things Bitcoin will ever do, because they're just on it all the time, you know? The PSBTs, all that stuff you really like to use as, like, at least a Bitcoiner. Yeah, that's cold card.
That's cold card, guys.
I'm not saying I don't have a Trezor or a Ledger, like...
But I have all of it. Personally, I have all of it. I bought all those things.
I wouldn't use them as single wallets. But I would use a cold card like that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm all for like air gap PSBT stuff. So when that's possible, then it's a pretty good wallet. I mean, the possibilities for them to interfere basically is very, very small, right? It's not a BitFi.
Oh, BitFi. It's so interesting with the BitFi that you only need like a PIN code to log in through the internet into the device and see your balances or something. Like, how is that even possible?
Well, you don't get a seed, right? From what I understand, you have a salt brace.
They generate
it. That's basically, yeah, it's basically, I don't know, a user and a password instead of 12 words that would be really secure. And, well, I think it's an Android device. I'm not even sure it doesn't have a little, like, GPS in it, whatever it is.
It probably does even so, geolocation.
I mean, it was supported by John McAfee, so that already means don't buy it, you know? Don't buy it.
Poor Mr. McAfee.
I don't know.
Have you seen what McAfee did last time? He was wearing panties as a mask at a German entry point when he landed with his airplane.
I think it was Norway.
No, he was in Germany, actually. Going over from Spain to Germany and he had the panties on.
But he got arrested in Norway for doing that.
I don't know.
But I don't care. Like, I gotta admit, it's just, I think all of his, he's like keeping up with the Kardashians' Twitter. You know? it just feels all drama, pre-programmed, and it's always the same story, and somehow he gets fucked up all the time. It's like Two and a Half Men, you know? Charlie got old. I don't know.
So let me just steer the topic a bit. How do you end up with the marketing of vegan products? Isn't it kind of like weird that you're a Bitcoiner and most Bitcoiners are more into this meat-eating culture and then you're the with the vegan product?
Well, I am not a vegan and I haven't been even working there. I have been always having a keto diet. I got to admit that because of this, and we had like an interesting atmosphere at this company because like, yeah, I had two partners. They were both vegans and they also followed like fitness, vegan fitness, you know, obviously.
What the hell is vegan fitness?
Yeah, well, basically trying to build muscle without eating meat, right?
How the hell do you do that?
Exactly. This is the basic
problem. Do they eat soy every day? Like soy for breakfast, soy for dinner?
We had no soy products.
Really?
Because soy somehow got mainstreamed because it's really growing well, you know, and you can really like, it really soaks up all the spices. Probably you can basically make everything of it, but it doesn't really like support itself as a logical choice for protein. I think that amino acid profile is only 21, if ever, amino acids you need. And well, you need 24, right? Just to say that. And most veggies, all of the veggies alone by themselves do not give you that protein. Like, no matter if you like, for example, a yellow European pea has like a high arginine amino acid profile. So that means like one of the amino acids is raised, but therefore it also doesn't have all 24 of them. And so your muscle which consists of all 24 will be underfed, you know? So it doesn't work like that. And your body starves, and especially your brain.
Yeah. But it's so, more interesting, like how this culture started to emerge here. But Japan being living in this thing, this whole thing around soy being there. Even with the Chinese, also. But they haven't been experiencing all these issues because people in Japan live really, really long, healthy lives, even though they consume lots of soy also.
You think they live healthy or they don't?
They probably live healthier than us.
You know, they have a very, for example, they eat a lot of different things.
Yeah,
so it's not very, like very, they all eat soy. If you get a shabu shabu, like then there is always some soy with it. But even then, it's a real good soy, usually, not the fake soy we eat here. They have like this real soy from like, I don't know, is it silk worms or something? It's a byproduct. It's different from what you might know from like Europe. And
Like the Kikkoman soy sauce that I usually buy in the metro is totally different than the one I buy in the Aldi or the Lidl. The taste is so weird. It's like it's like not soy sauce.
The Kikkoman?
Yeah, no, the Aldi and the Lidl one.
Yeah, that's sugar. Like the, most like of sugar, these things, isn't it? Yeah. No, it's the same too. I don't know. Like the first time I had real wasabi, Japan. In San Francisco, like when somebody comes to your table and actually like crushes the root down, the wasabi root, to make wasabi, you know,
then
you mix it with a little soy sauce, and that's basically how you eat sushi.
Like I need an experience in my life.
It's really worth it. I personally, like, due to my, you know, father getting lucky, you know, exiting like socialism or communism or how you want to say, and get a good job and stuff and being able to support his family. And like, we had like all kinds of vacation.
Yeah.
And like, all I want to say, I really appreciate other cultures and the food and stuff. And it's always nice to do it. You know, I like to eat sushi with dicks because that's how it has been shown to me by Japanese people. I like to respect that, you know. Little things like you don't stick your sticks in the rice upright because that, you know, they understand it as death. Or that's something that's interesting, you know. Low time preference.
There's lots of low time preference in Japan, but lots of high time preference also, what I can see there happening, which is quite alarming.
That's Western cities, no? I mean, when you think about it,
Western culture. I mean, even there, you can see that for the older generation, there's low time preference in general, but for the younger generation, high time preference being getting much more increasingly apparent. Because there's, even with the childbirth rate, it's really, really low.
Yeah, I mean, if Japanese people, are supposedly very smart and the education system it's known to be good. And if that's so, then you can understand that, you know, intelligent people have relationships later, have children later, and have less children than other people. And I think that's just due to they feel it's not right. How we're living right now, what's going on right now. I couldn't imagine having a child right now. I mean, I don't even know how the world is going to look in 3 years. I don't know where I want to live. I hope the citadel is being built, you know. I hope we can get all invested because, fuck it, hyper-Bitcoinization happens, hyperinflation happens, and we going to end up and being some of the elite players, some of us, you know, taking it in their hands to change something. People that understood that Bitcoin is not only about getting rich, but what you are going to do with that.
Interesting. Did you quit this job at least?
Well, I sold my part of it and with that quit, yes.
Good job.
It's not like it went out on a real bad whatever. I just was done. You know, all I did was like the branding and marketing. I changed it a little bit and it was boring at that point. I understood what I needed to understand about the culture, about basically about what is going on, you know, that there are really a lot of people that are just also influenced by mainstream. You know, like you ask people that are trying to come and work for you, right? HR and stuff. And they're going to just ask, like, what's the reason? Like, are you vegan? Most of them are passionate about being vegan when they come and work there, you know? Which is kind of weird. I mean, like, I don't need to eat soy to make vegan marketing.
Soy ball culture.
Yeah, it's weird. But you get like good exchanges when you say that. Well, the main marketing guy in the company is eating a lot of meat, and is not joining for the restaurants. And you know, I gotta say. I have studied my postgraduate in San Francisco, and that was 2014, and CrossFit just exploded because of Rich Froning, and I think everybody there went to a box, and the keto diet, basically eating only meat and cutting the carbs, and the logic behind that was already there for me at the point. Yeah. I was going to start working there. I just really wanted to understand what's behind their reasoning. Like, I know the guys that have been starting the company from some other stuff. You know, we've been smoking a little bit weed together, and they've been at one point talking about their passion and that they have been, you know, vegans for some time, and that they figured out that there actually was a product missing on the market because, as you mentioned, it's all just soy protein, and they figured out that that's not enough for their fitness aspirations, and figured out like, hey, to get all 24 amino acids, we need at least mix two different kind of veggies with a really good amino acid profile together, so we can kind of really support the full amino acid profile and really say this is protein. Because when you go out and buy soy protein, that's not protein. When you eat soy products, it doesn't do anything for you by itself. It's not even good for the environment. It's all monoculture. It's, you know, it's bad. They don't want to understand. It's always this argument of like, oh, but it's animals or environment or cancer. Yeah, most of them never read anything really about it, but they can tell you the headline from the last 3 days and the reports on TV and which channel said it, you know.
They can't live without those things.
I mean, it's all the source of their truth. Unfortunately, they do not read really about the Stone Age diet or where we, from a perspective of evolution, even started to like be human, you know, Homo sapiens.
So, yeah, like how, you know, society is transforming and culture is transforming, and with that, how the society is, you know, kind of falling apart because of it.
Because, well, you know, how our, like, brains work and develop, yeah, too, you know, just that already.
This kind of brings us to our main topic, like high time preference here, which is, like, you know, very interesting, like how money changes people's behavior and how this kind of, you know, influences company behavior also, which is projected onto them by their investors.
Oh, okay. Like, you mean stockholders as investors?
Yeah. You know, when you are investing into a company, your main goal of investing is not because you want to be able to control the company. Your main goal is to make a profit off of the share, which is a high time preference behavior.
Yeah.
Not that it's somebody might say that it's low time preference because you're investing into something that is stable value. It might be stable, but you're expecting a return of value. Because if a company is not properly performing and it's losing value on its stock and share prices, then the shareholders are probably going to be selling those shares. So yeah, this completely changes a company behavior into a high time preference category, which in the end gets projected down onto society.
Because a high, are you talking about PPP loans, and or are you just talking about?
I'm just talking about not about a PPP loans. It's about, you know, how companies, you know, start diluting, for example, food products.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, like shrinkflation exists because of inflation. Mm-hmm. The companies want to maintain a price, but they want to offer less without, you know, alerting the consumer that a product is not the same anymore. That is either changes.
Yeah, they're not even.
Yes.
Sorry, they're not even changing the packaging.
They're not even changing the packaging, yeah. They're just going to remove, I mean, lower the content and then change the gram count on the side, which is really, really scammy. Like, we're getting there, like, this companies are outright scamming us. Like, yeah. Here in Hungary, Coca-Cola changed their products, product portions for the soft drinks. We had 2.5 liter, we had 2 liter, 1.5 liter, and 1 liter. Now, guess what happened? 2.5 liter got replaced with 2.25. 2 liter got replaced by 1.75. 1.5 got replaced by 1.25. 1 liter doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. It's like opening a can of chips.
Yeah, basically. And they kept the prices the same. And they said that they did this because of consumer behavior, which is a big bullshit, a big pile of bullshit. Coca-Cola was scamming people, lowering the portion sizes, and they're literally scamming everyone and just raising the prices instead of at least telling people allegedly that at least there's a inflation going on, we cannot keep up with the prices because our shareholders demanding more money, we need to start increasing our prices. I would accept that more, better understand that what is the root cause instead of hiding it away and then pushing down the costs onto society. Because that forward, because basically what that does, that it destroys society also. It makes people, you know, consume less because they cannot afford bigger products anymore. Because it's only the smaller portions being sell for them.
So you mean they consume less because
the portions are decreasing and the prices remain the same. And even then, the product might actually turn into inferior quality.
Yes, most do.
And then, you know, here comes the thing with this thing, what we've been talking about before, is that, you know, how additives start coming into the picture. For example, in the past, sausages made abroad and in Hungary were much more higher quality back in the 80s, 90s, 70s. They were completely different even during the socialist era. They were much more ginormous sized. And then it started decreasing over time.
Did you see the Big Mac picture?
Oh yeah, it's been decreasing also.
That is ridiculous. When you look at the Big Mac, how it was today, you look at it, it's like, why is it called Big Mac? You know, but it made sense once.
It's like, even there. It's, I don't know.
That you said you watched the Hard Money Phone. Happen?
Because, you know, this is the fact that if you think about this, how many times people can, you know, do this. How many times a company can get away with this? Now, I will tell you the truth. They can't get away with it more than once.
As long as they can change their name.
As long as they can change their name, maybe, okay, that's your right. But if my Big Mac would be getting smaller and I would notice it, I would stop buying it. So, like, even with the Big Mac, what we can see is that it decreased in size, yeah. It looked much more interesting in the past.
Yeah, it looked like a big burger, and it had probably a very attractive price. I don't know that out of, like, from the top of my head right now, but... Like the Hard Money film, I think Xavier Dean is also having like a little, like few minutes in it. And he's talking about that you were able to once buy like a steak for $1, then it was only a burger patty. And today you're lucky if you get like a soy patty, you know, and that's for sure not true. You know, like I'm going to the supermarket. I see how much Beyond Meat actually costs. It's really crazy.
Here's a picture of it, the Big Mac prices.
Like a Big Mac,
65 cents only. Oh my god, that's crazy! How much inflation? And now, how much does it cost? Like $5 or $4, three?
I think the burger costs alone at least between $3 and $4.
Yeah, here it's like I think here it costs like €4 here in Hungary.
I haven't been to McDonald's in a long time, and I'm really proud of that. Really trying to follow this low time preference thing, where you know, even when I'm craving sometime whatever stuff. I tend to make it myself now. And if I really would like to go out, I sometimes just think what this involves, what I'm voting for with what I'm doing, you know? Like, if I want the world around me to change, like, I gotta change myself, you know? At one point, we all gotta realize we gotta be better, not just for ourselves, but for everybody else around us. And I think when one starts and then the other, you see the Bitcoiners online tweeting about how their lives changed, how they're going independent, how they're going autark, like away from the cities and trying to be on their own, living off their own land, you know, like Robin Hood wanted it. Like it's really, really great to see. And I really hope that to go back to the question about like what's Bitcoin going to do, that people just trying to appreciate stuff more, like the family, like what they're trying to destroy right now, basically, like, you know,
is it still alive? I think it's already destroyed.
Families,
yeah,
mine is well intact. I mean, like, what can I say?
Lucky the ones who still have an intact family.
Every family has shit going on. We all have relationships. We all say stuff. Most stuff happens out of love or because of like missing love or whatever. And like, I'm not preaching here. I'm just trying to say that low time preference and Bitcoin have the potential for like keeping these things intact and like being like a new backbone. We just had only the soft money right now, this modern money theory where like everything gets soy, you know, everything is fucked up. Because mainstream media needed to get in there, and a few individuals, in my opinion, are trying to push products on us. You know, it feels like back in the 50s when you watch Mad Men, when John Hamm and the people talk about tobacco and how they like advertise for cigarettes being healthy and doctors smoking Camel. And these people have been fucking up the earth with basically fracking oil and things. And at the same time, they're pushing the narrative of new Green Deal, you know? So basically...
Spend the trillions of dollars and have every rooftop in the fucking sound
it's
collector.
It's like a movie script or a lot of movie scripts together. Did you watch... Is it Guy Ritchie? I think the director is Guy Ritchie. I really like his movies with... Yeah, I'm talking Hollywood right now. Everybody hates Hollywood right now. I hate Hollywood. Like, fuck Hollywood. But it's about this Professor Moriarty, you know, who basically single-handedly owns the armory and all the bandages. And basically, he's just putting people in place to start a war, you know, and to profit of, like, both sides. And this is how this whole thing is right now, in my opinion. We have this elite... And they are having the media in their control. They're pushing narratives, and these narratives sell products, and that's what it is. And for getting these few people even richer than they are right now because of high time preference enabling greed, you know, like our one of our worst qualities, you know?
Yeah.
Because of that, like, these people promote socialism, you know, because they know there's only little opportunity to change anything anymore, because they already own 99% of whatever there is to own, you know? Nobody knows the money number right now. I think they started or stopped publishing, what is it, M1? Like, I think we only know M2, right? The amount of money that's flying around.
I think so.
Including the bonds or something. And then there's like some more money flying around, but they are not exposing that. And nobody knows right now. And I think that got so offhand. America has been printing as if they would still be the world reserve currency, but we already assessed they're not anymore. Or at least for two of the biggest players being Russia and China, for them, not anymore.
Why do you think milk chocolate contains soy?
Well, it's number one, like, I think it has been proven, it does something to you. It changes you, like, your chemistry. It attacks the hormones, and also it's a really cheap supplement for vegetable oil, right? I don't know what chocolate has to do with, why do they need to put oil in that, but it probably is a calculation thing. I mean, that's the problem, you know, it's all about, globalization was all about efficiency and increasing the output for, like, I think that's the principle of the minimal, where you only put this much money in to get a higher output. But I think that was a problem, you know, a high time preference, produce as much as cheaply and still keep the taste, instead of like just sell the product and keep the quality up. I mean, who doesn't want to be in a position where you have a reliable product that everybody loves and everybody demands, and you just don't need to fuck it up, you know? But they decided to fuck it up because one at the head of this whole company wanted to get even richer and exchanged, I don't know what, like butter for oil, most likely.
Crazy. Can this be possible? All of this is like going down just for UBI to kick in, and then these companies can just have like a free stream of money coming in,
you know,
from it's government.
Scary. It's scary. I see that in America. I have had people here that I've been talking to business wise that talk about UBI and think that it's a great thing. And, you know, it's kind of hard to play nice sometimes and be calm and don't expose yourself too, you know, right? You have been right. Like the last time we've been meeting, you've been visiting me. You also told me that this is probably going to happen, that Bitcoiners are basically the people that, you know, in the end, they are going to try to extract wealth from people that publicly said that they own Bitcoin, like a 6102 order for Bitcoin people, because they try to get it, and a few will fall for that, yeah. You know?
With the regulatory capture now becoming even more apparent.
Yeah, and you don't want to be, I don't want to be a part of that. I stopped, like, I only talk to people I trust or I know, or, you know, I have been losing, like, all my friends since Bitcoin, and losing, you know, I'm kind of lucky that I don't have this anymore at all, where you have to explain yourself all the time when you're not watching TV or reading books or all that stuff. I mean, it's just nothing that the mainstream does. And people I know, like, they have jobs at Google, you know? So they're lost, at least the people I know. Red Bull, Google, like some analytics company that's writing scripts between those companies. So they don't believe it. They have been fully involved with Fridays for Future, with climate change, climate refugee, like whatever soy topic you can come up with. Like the guy from Google sat on my couch one, it was just one evening, we're just drinking, talking Python, because he's using that too. And I was like, just at this point, like really getting into it and learning a little. And then suddenly he gets his phone out, which is a fucked up Nokia with like whatever version of Android run on there, like still getting sick that this was in my network. But like just saying, oh my God, it was about time they saved this amount of refugees again or something, you know? And I don't really know. And then like 5 minutes later, I was talking about property rights and how crazy it is that you can basically print your own gun. And suddenly suddenly you were a Nazi, you know?
You were a Nazi? He said that, really?
Oh, yeah. Like, that went very quick. I wasn't really, like, I was calm, you know? I just explained to this person that I like to have the option to defend my opinion. And, yeah, well, basically that guns don't shoot people, like, knives don't stab people. And that it is about liberty. And yeah, at this point, he decided to leave. I just told him that people can have different opinions. Dude, that's like 3 years ago, and I've never heard of him again.
I think that's better that way.
It's better that way. But you know, it's just these things where you understand that, well, you cannot wake these people up all the same way, all the same speed. They had probably a real sheltered position in life, and I can tell you, like, he's a single kid and he has never, like, missed anything in his life, basically, you know. Like Ben Hunt. Like Ben Hunt on TFTC talking about, like, why are you always saying hyper-Bitcoinization? No. Like, you know. Just these people that do not have vision because their bags are full. Their pockets are full. Like, why the Winklevi never really had care about anything in their life, you know? That they're in the position they are in. They have been proving that they're curious, tech curious, you know, that they have been betting on the underdog more than once, and that they were willing to spend a lot of their dad's money on that. But other than that, like, there is no reason for them to be exposed to Bitcoin. They don't go out and help the Bitcoin project down there in South America, or, you know, they're just pumping more shit coins.
What do you think about shit coins?
Man, I think I've been vocal about that on Twitter. I think shit coins are real shit. I think they're Ponzi schemes, like banks are Ponzi schemes by the central banks down to the root, you know? Anything shit coins do is enabling. It's enabling gambling. It's enabling high time preference. It's enabling a bad kind of competition between people. You know, it's to the point where it doesn't even matter anymore what the white paper says about this utility token or stable coin. It's only like, oh my God, there's this new coin. And somebody said it's being like in pre-sale for half of the money. Like, let's get on it. That's kind of the link feeling right now.
Crazy. Like,
it is crazy.
There's like a token for everything, like YAM tokens, or how the hell you spell it.
I mean, have you been 2017 already? Like,
no.
You saw that, no?
I did see it. I did buy a shitcoin also back then that was like for $25, but it doesn't worth anything now for some reason.
I mean, you know, like, I have been, I have had one shitcoin, no, two shitcoins, both by Jade McCaleb, you know, this.
Oh, God.
Yeah, XRP and XLM. But back in the day, it was just like, you know, my explanation honestly was like, I rather be on both sides of the court when whatever happens. Like,
I've been in that phase also myself, to be honest.
I was just thinking like a typical branding guy who just doesn't know yet all about it, who hasn't yet read enough about it, you know, who I just thought, okay, like XRP is positioning themselves as the banking coin and this is that, you know, and hey, why not write out the gains? But this is exactly what is awful.
But it's such a scam. The way they are doing it, sorry for, but like, but it this is so outrageous, at least for me, when I figured out what this whole thing is about. Because, you know, the whole thing that Ripple is trying to do is that to deleverage the remittance risk from banks and put that risk of transactional risk into the speculators. Because now the banks don't need to hold the Nostro Vostro amounts. Instead, they just need to keep the money that they're sending on hand by the customer who's sending it, and then with that money buy it from the liquidity pool. And then who is holding the risk? The liquidity provider, aka the stupid XRP investor, basically.
And it's that like way, a 2008 sell-off of like Giramaldi, Triple B, whatever bond. It's just bad. You know that too much already, you know?
It's a massive scam. But the scam is so good that they were able to create this leverage. I mean, they can leverage people who they are scamming in order to use them as liquidity. Like, this is like the real immoral scam that they can do, and they are selling the XRP to others, and they are selling it also for themselves in order, because now they need to pivot, because banks like Santander said, oh, we don't need to use this shitcoin for transacting cross borders because we can do it more easily without them. Nobody gonna have a use case for this, and Ripple is gonna collapse in a couple years. It's gonna be dead. Everybody who put money into it is gonna be just wiped out immediately.
I don't think XRP is going to be here so long. I mean,
it probably could die sooner. I don't know. The faster it's gone, the better.
You know, they're just exposing a knowledge gap between the traditional or legacy finances and what cryptocurrency really is. And I feel, a lot of people start buying this because of unit bias and not even knowing anything about it at the level you've just been explaining it. They are just trying to gamble on the third biggest or second or whatever it is right now that they get a lot for. Like, oh my God, I get like $3-4, you know? But that's just why we wanted to have sats as a standard on the exchanges, right? So you can see how many sats you actually get for a dollar. You get still over 8,000 sats for a dollar. You get 3 XRP. And these are not, this is literally not worth anything. It is not worth shit, which is why it is a shit coin. It is a centralized pre-mine, pre-sold security that is just brown nosing up to the government because they fucking have to. Otherwise, they would already be scammed out and put down by the government.
All of these guys, even at these shit coins, are all status. Like David Schwartz also is like he is so stuck in a world that I would totally say that he's now, he's just trying to scam everybody, literally.
That's the bald dude with the long hair that looks like,
yeah, not oh bald dude, but he looks really old with the long hair. Kind of baldy.
I mean, yeah, scammers scam, right? That's why you don't go into the bank to ask about Bitcoin. That's why you don't use Google to, I mean, I have examples. I mean, what I'm trying to do, one of the things is like I have a little boomer group. I'm trying to help them get set up on or with Bitcoin. Like I explained to some of them, like even through video chat now or like before in little groups, a little organized, you know, like some people my father knows, some people that are just interested and I happen to know. And they just want to like get out of their portfolio, some want to liquidate their life insurance or whatever. And
that's crazy. When is this all gonna end? What do you think? Is it able to end one day? Can you put an end to like shitcoins somehow?
The story is Bitcoin is going to be the final and ultimate unit of account, like MicroStrategy put so well just recently also. And maybe there will be some coins built up on that it doesn't have to be coins. You know, the Lightning Network is awesome. It's super scalable and all that. But there could be a few situations where we still have like a government that asks for payment in a certain kind of currency. So maybe there's going to be such a government shitcoin, or like let's call it security coin, because you're basically paying the government for the minimum service of providing maybe security. Also, when I would think decentralized security is always better. Most things decentralized are better.
Probably, I don't know.
So like we will see what happens, but I think finally it's going to be the ultimate unit of account, and maybe there exist shitcoins for governments or specific utility, but you know, there's absolute no need for. In my eyes, like in my opinion, it could all end well with Bitcoin, you know, and with the improvement the Lightning Network has been doing, and Jack with Alan Strike, and like you're gonna join later too, right? Did you sign up to the VR event tonight?
Yeah,
I'm going to join VR. Like the Quest is always a little bit. I have a Quest, you know, Oculus Quest, I showed you, right? Didn't you play the VR headset?
Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that.
I've been getting into that.
Sorry about that. Okay. But my mother keeps pestering me.
Yeah, I know the pain. So yeah, I think shitcoins have a big probability to die.
I hope so. I really hope. I just want to see them gone. But like, there have been like lots of argument against their disappearance. But I don't really like that argument. Really, certain shitcoin that I really dislike.
People like to gamble in a high time preference. Let's see how that is when the ultimate unit of account is a low time preference unit like Bitcoin.
I hope so. Well, okay, I think we reached the end of the podcast. I really thank you for coming. This conversation was really amazing with you. I hope everybody else enjoyed the show also. So thanks a lot, man, for coming.
Yeah, thank you, Kara, for having me. I hope everybody had a good time listening. And yeah, that was my first podcast, man. So yeah. Thank you very much.
I always end up with people who has the first podcast going on. Like, you're like the sixth, I think.
Everybody needs that. And the more plebcasts we have, the better. I feel most people just, you know, the echo chamber we call Twitter. We always stumble across the same stuff, the same people. And I just hope that every time we get a new wave of new coiners, that they do something and they bring in their following. When they need podcasts to do that and like have friends like we are, you know, then that's really cool. And I hope we have more plebcasts like Kindergarten by Coin Icarus. Oh no, like My Living Truth and Nick and Mine, right?
Yep.
So that's really, really great. You got to stay bullish at all times, you know? I think like when you really discover Bitcoin for yourself, it's like your drug. It's what you do. It's what you preach. It's what you live and breathe by, you know?
Yeah. I'm really pumped about their podcast also going forward. Bitcoin Kindergarten is a really cool place. I can really recommend going in and then talking whenever possible. But there are like other ones also really with Saints.
Saint Bitcoin, Plebcast. Yeah. All ye Dieter Bob, like big fan.
Well, thanks for coming, man.
Thank you for having me. Bye, man.
Well, that was the episode with Eric. I hope you guys really enjoyed it as much as I did. I don't know when the next episode is going to be coming out, but probably very, very soon. As far as I know, we're going to be having a little talk with the BT chap again. And then I think Tanuki is going to come again. So we're kind of destroying your imagination of the furry female there. So yeah, we got some really epic content coming up. And don't forget, there's also the Pleb Security Congress coming up on September 5 and 6. The Congress will be a two-day event. We're going to have many interesting guests talking about important topics, like Harlanath Katya. There's going to be Jackie talking about importance of organization. Francis Pouliot going to be coming also. And we will have Shinobi Alexandra doing presentations about interesting things. So yeah, that's all. Thanks for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. And stay tuned for next time.